Kia ora and welcome to another Aotearoa Rugby Pod as the rugby season draws to its end. And boy, was it a weekend of action. The All Blacks once again falling short, the second week in a row. So much to talk about there. The Northern Hemisphere giving it to the Southern Hemisphere as the power base changed. So many things to talk about. We've got Super Rugby squads. We've got the Black Ferns and their tough Northern tour. Boy, an end of year review, if ever there was one. I'm joined by James Parsons and Bryn Hall. Thanks very much, fellas. Jippa, you first. Are you reeling from Sunday morning? How do you feel after the second test loss in a row for the All Blacks?
Oh, well, as a fan, you know, you always want your team to win. But I don't think it's all doom and gloom. I think 2 years out from a World Cup, still have plenty of time to make adjustments to the style we play. And we've built a bit of depth in the squad. And we've been in a unique situation the last 2 years with COVID. So it's certainly not a record we want to have. And the players have acknowledged that. And certainly us as New Zealand public, see the All Black brand as a picture of excellence. And it has fallen below that in the last 2 weeks. But I think they'll learn a hell of a lot from it and put them in good stead building towards 2023.
Bryn, are you going to give them, time, or are you worried at this point, a couple of years out from a World Cup?
No, I wouldn't say worried, but I think the more important thing was obviously taking the learnings that they have had from this tour. And I think, you know, Ian Foster and even the coaches and even the players as well, it's been a long tour. You know, it's not your normal kind of tour that we do have. You know, we went five tests in a row, then had a little break and then five tests in a row. So, you know, obviously with COVID in 2022 and hopefully with the vaccinations and being a little bit of normality coming back into the, you know, the calendar for internationals, we might see a little bit more, a better schedule for the All Blacks. But look, I think again, there's some good test matches that they did do this year. And obviously, you know, you don't want to end your season around with the Irish game and the French game. But what it does do, it's probably gives the coaching staff and the players something to kind of look forward to and make sure that they do have the learnings coming into next year, and saying that, you know, that 2022 year is going to be massive for them, making the learnings that they did do in probably the last two test matches when it was probably evident and, you know, the whole of the world was able to see, the thing that the All Blacks probably need to work on the next probably 12 to 24 months.
What are those lessons, Jibba?
Look, I think it's probably decision-making with ball in hand. You know, Fozzie sort of alluded to it after the Irish test, and again, we had plenty of opportunities in that first half. We're normally known as a team, if you go into the 22, we come away with points. And a number of times we didn't due to skill execution or, you know, the French's ability to win the ball back. And then the other thing is obviously that discipline as well. Like, we gave the French a couple of easy exits. Even when we did turn the ball over in the 22, we then gave a penalty away, which piggybacked them up the field and relieved the pressure on them. So couple of those things, but also taking reference back to the Welsh game, where we actually started the game with picking through the middle and being really direct with our forwards. And I know it's an old school sort of saying when it comes to rugby, but you got to earn that right to go wide. And they did that really well against the Welsh, and they went through that middle. And when they actually started picking through the middle in that third 20-minute block, that's when we had our most success and scored some points. So potentially looking at that game and bringing that into their game earlier, because with this rush D and all these defences getting confident against the All Blacks attack, that's when they've got all the energy. You know, all the atmosphere is in them. You know, they've got plenty of blood and adrenaline running through them. So maybe taking them on up front and sucking a bit of that energy out, and then allowing the boys out wide time on the ball, because you've tightened that defence and gives them the ability to execute. Because I certainly don't think it's a skill set thing. It's just making, I suppose, the different decisions and shaping the game as they go along.
Yeah.
Bryn, with that in mind about the pick and go, the tighter stuff, we saw it work against Wales, it barely featured against Ireland. Why would it only be plan B against France? Why is it the fallback option?
Well, it just depends, really. It's more so like you have like your solutions going into a game. So, you know, they probably would have thought possibly that they wanted to stay with their traditional shape that they did do. And like, we even probably look in that first, you know, look at that probably first 10, 15 minutes when we accumulated those points, that was due for us to playing in our structures and playing through what we wanted to do. So whether there was good clearance and that break, especially in the breakdown, we talked about it last week around them not getting that right. But in the first patches of play, they did really well being able to accumulate pressure and being able to put the defence under pressure. And then that in turn came to having 6 points in that first stanza. But unfortunately, you know, the first two tries that happened so quickly and probably that 24-11, sorry, the 24 points they scored in the first half. After that, we ended up chasing the game from that. And so, you know, when you do get a little bit of pressure on you, you want to be able to play a little bit more. And there were a little few uncharacteristic mistakes from the All Blacks that, you know, the French pounced on. I thought their click attack and counter attack ability off our mistakes were really, really good in that first half. And so they took their opportunities and really gave out that massive lead in that first half. But, you know, in that kind of second half, I thought, you know, going into that pick and go was a great solution for that. You know, they tried to play a little bit and weren't getting what they wanted. And to have that ability to be able to go through the middle, and, you know, it was probably from that 47th to the 60 minute mark, we scored 19 points with just going through the pick and goes with the like of Tokiaho, I thought was outstanding coming off the bench and really getting over the advantage line, the likes of Aki through that pick and go, and even Artie Sevier again, who in that kind of domain is where we need him to be able to get over there and get over that advantage line for that ball. So, and then in test matches, you know, it comes down to little moments. And, you know, you look at the 62nd minute when, you know, Intermac, you know, it's a quick kick all the way down to our opposition line into their back into their goal line. He ends up coming out, does a little dummy, and then they go the full length of the field and that kind of gets that pressure from there. And turns it when the game was in the balance. And then obviously Davies, unfortunate one with that intercept, the fact that, you know, if it does go to hand, you know, there's a possibility that we could go down the edge and make some gains out of that. So it all marries up, and I think it's going to be just some really good learnings and coming through this tour and moving forward to 2022 and what that's going to look like, especially in pressure situations like that, that they're going to play against France, you know, in the opening game or in a quarterfinal or semi-final game where the plan A might not work, but what's plan B? Is it through the pick and go like we saw for that kind of third quarter, or is it our kicking game that we might need some attacking kicks? We saw, you know, Geordie Barrett give one to George Bridge and taking our opportunities when we get it like that in tight test matches against some good quality opposition that we are going up against at the moment.
A tough end to the year, Jipper. Have there been any improvements since 2019? I mean, they've had a foundation this year. They've had 15 test matches. They've had a lot of time together, a lot of time and long periods together. Have they made any improvements since the last World Cup, or are they in the same place?
No, I certainly think they have made improvements because they've had the blueprint. When they've had that front foot ball and they've been really physical at the breakdown, we've seen, you know, how electric their attack can be. And I also think for the most part, except for probably the last 2 weeks, their defensive system's been really strong. You know, they've really focused on that low tackler and getting in and winning those breakdown turnovers. And that's becoming such a key, I suppose, part of the game is the ability to turn that ball over at the breakdown. So for the most part, I think parts of their game have evolved. The one thing we do have to sometimes just step back and have a look at is the quality of the French and the Irish, the way they applied pressure. And what I mean by that is they came in with a clear plan, and I don't know if the French copied Ireland, but they stopped taking their points. So often we see teams take their points early against the All Blacks and they try to build that scoreboard pressure, but they were relentless both times in those first 40s in the sense that they kicked to the corner and they said, right, we're going to suck some energy out of them. And then, if you know, it's all or nothing. It's a bit of a gamble, but it's an all or nothing play. And then both sides switched to taking the three as soon as they were in the second half because they knew they'd got that lead and they just needed to chip away at three and keep that scoreboard building to a point where the pressure was enough for the All Blacks to keep chancing their arm. And they obviously did chance their arm. And Bryn mentioned it, you know, the turning point of, you know, not nailing that kick chase, French going all the way, and then Artie unfortunately getting penalised and yellow carded, you know, which forced that pressure because they knew if they scored there that would have been a tough place to come back from. So it was an all or nothing play from the All Blacks, but that's due to the way they structured their game as in the French, and Ireland did the same. So it puts your skill set and I suppose your mindset under pressure. And you know, you've heard Fozzie and Sam Whitelock and Sam Kane and co all talk about, I suppose, composure in the big moments. And that's what I think. So I know it's not ideal today and right now, but I think that the lessons that were taken out of that for a lot of the young guys that they've blooded this year since the last World Cup is going to be massive for them, but also massive for their leadership group, having now experienced it and not overcome it they'll have those feelings and they'll be having the discussions. Well, how do we best get around this next time so that we come out the other end of these games? But you know, we can talk about turning points in 60 minutes, 50 minutes, but at the end of the day, the All Blacks are normally the side that gets out to a hot start. And I think if we can nail our start and get our game plan right about going through the middle of teams, because every time we did that this year, our forwards showed the blueprint of our success. So I think it's just backing ourselves, even against the bigger teams. Potentially, maybe we need to put on a bit more size. I don't know. But if we go with that game plan initially that we showed in parts of the Rugby Championship, I think we're still a force to be reckoned with.
I think also as well, Ross, you talk around some things that possibly could be an improvement. You talk around probably the turnover aspect as well. Like, I think our defensive system this year has been really, really good, and we've been operating at a pretty high percentage. But I think, you know, you look at the Irish game, yep, we've got to have a high success rate of 88, 89%. But, you know, being able to make tackles time and time again, over and over, and I know France, sorry, no, I know Ireland is the example where it's to the nth degree around 238 tackles. But the ability to be able to stunt people's momentum and growth around their ball playing, and when they have the ball for a long period of time, I think that could be maybe an improvement that we could do. Get a turnover to be able to take their momentum away, and then we can start going into being able to go into their territory and be able to put teams under pressure through our play, whether that be through our maul, our scrum, or being able to play in the 22, like Gyp said, and probably be a little bit more clinical in scoring points there. And then maybe even also off our kick chase as well. You look at the South Africans and even the Northern Hemisphere teams when they do their box kicks or their contestables off 10, the ability that they have a jackler right then and there, whether it be a prop, you know, you look at Kitsoff or Marks in the South Africans, they have a really good ability to be able to go from defence. If you think of defence mindset, kicking in this hemisphere, if you do a contestable really, really well, and then you've got someone clamping on the ball straight away, straight then and there, you've got a penalty, and then you're going 50 metres down into the 22 areas, and where we can be so clinical and we can be so ruthless because with our ball ability and playing on top of teams. So I think maybe those are two areas that, you know, you could possibly come in away from this test series just through the whole year, that that it could be a bit of an improvement moving forward to get better, to give ourselves opportunity to score more points and be a little bit more ruthless in that way.
If you look at the three tests that we lost, okay, against the Springboks, we lost the breakdown turnovers. And then against Ireland, it was the same. We lost the amount. They won more breakdown turnovers than us, and the same against the French. Every other game that we won the breakdown turnovers. So it just shows the importance of having that physical dominance in your clean out, so it doesn't allow the opposition the ability, as Bryn says, to stunt your momentum, because it's such a big play. We saw how much it meant to James Lowe the week before when Peter Omani got that crucial turnover from a breakout from the All Blacks, and it was no different on the weekend. The French were very effective in getting those turnovers, so I think that's key. But also, I think we need to change our perception of Northern Hemisphere rugby, because for the most part, the Northern Hemisphere teams are the ones kicking to the corner earlier and going for the 7 points rather than the three. And you know, for I suppose the Southern Hemisphere sides, due to probably the pressure they were under and the games needed a breather, so they took the three. But it was quite a role reversal, I felt, when you're watching these games.
Where are our cleaners? You know, if they're not there and they're not doing it adequately and the opposition are getting the ball, where on earth are they?
It's not just the cleaners. So first off, it's the ball carrier's right to win the collision. If he wins the collision, it makes the cleaner's role a lot easier. And it's not that the cleaners aren't there, but if you don't win the collision and you get a chop tackle right around your legs and you drop right there, and your cleaners are running their support lines to one, receive a pass, clean out, play halfback. It's then a race. And then if it's a really good chop tackle and they've won that line speed pressure and they've got a mate inside and out that can just get on that ball straight away, guys like Marks, Wokey, Skelton you saw on the weekend, tough to move. Doesn't even matter if you join that race 50-50. It is really tough to move. And you've now got to get the accuracy of your clean right. So you cannot go anywhere near the head. So it's a real tough job. So the key is actually on the ball carrier to win the collision, first and foremost. And that makes the cleaner's job so much easier.
So where are we in the world now? We've come out of this. You mentioned the Northern Hemisphere dominance, their approach to really take it to the Southern Hemisphere teams. You look at New Zealand losing to South Africa, losing to Wales, losing to France. How
I don't
strong
know
will
if I
England
use
have looked?
I don't know if I use
I'm
the
not like
actual
the Wales.
adjective dominance.
Where on earth are the All Blacks in the standings right now? Like, legit, never mind the official rankings. Bryn, where do they sit in the pantheon of things as we sit right now?
Oh, look, I think, you know, there's a lot of things that have happened during this year. And look, we've talked around their test schedule and the ability of being away from home. And I know, you know, from that group in the New Zealand All Black coaches and even the players, you know, they won't be using the schedule or the amount of time that they've been away from home as any form of an excuse. But you know, as a fan, and you look at our test schedule, you know, it's a tough way to do that. So you'd like to think possibly in 2022 it might be a little bit more lenient towards us to be able to have you know, back-to-back weeks or a week off to be able to refresh and get ready for another big test match. But look, we're still right up there. You know, we're still right up there. We're consistently always in and around there. Look, we lost three games this year out of 15 test matches. So, you know, if you look at the other Southern Hemisphere teams, you know, they're really nowhere around the fact of the success that we've had. And it's just unfortunate the back end of the year, you know, the Northern Hemisphere teams have really come to the forefront. So you probably look now within the top of the world rugby scale, you've probably got six or seven teams now that are really competitive and can beat anybody on the day. If it was competition or World Cup right now, you'd probably go into that competition thinking there's six or seven teams that could win this competition, like really, really well. And so we're still right up there. You know, we've had a successful year around, you know, having 12 wins in a big year, but it's probably just more so the other unions, and especially the Northern Hemisphere, coming to the party and really, you know, taking to the Southern Hemisphere teams this year, and more so putting them on notice and knowing that, you know what, you've got to change a few things coming for not only next year, but for 2023, because if you don't change and you don't adapt with what's happening, you're going to get results where, you know, we didn't win them.
Isn't that the crux of the issue, though? I feel like as a, you know, completely, as a journalist, not a rugby player, I've watched since about 2017 and felt like, actually, we haven't learned a lot. We've kind of stayed in the same place. You know, we continue to get beaten by the same things, the line speed, the forward pressure, the breakdown. Like, it feels like we're not going anywhere, Jip.
Well, those are key parts of the game, but I don't think we had that, I suppose, that pick and go mindset. I think that's been a big shift. Obviously, we were quite the expansive team. We had the three forwards, and it was a clear way of attack. But as you've alluded to, like, teams have got used to that, and they believe that line speed pressure can put us under pressure. So I think there has been evolution in our game. But I think it's important to know as well, like, if there's ever a time to have a couple of back-to-back losses. I think the last time this happened was potentially 2009, which is 2 years out. Well, that was the last time we lost three tests, I can't remember. But 2 years out from the 2011 World Cup, and we know, you know, how successful that was. So I think there's so many lessons and positives to take out of the situation. And look, call me an optimistic bloke, but I think it sets us up. If you look at the Springboks before the 2019 World Cup, people were probably saying the same things. And they really found their way and you know, galvanised as a group and led the charge into 2019. And I'm hoping to see the same from us. Because if you look at it face value on form, you know, the Irish, man, they're playing some great footy and their skill set and attack. Like, Tark Furlong's making line breaks and offloading to his mate Porter. Like, he did it again on the weekend. You know, a young man out of Leinster, Kate, you know, they're creating depth as well. Young guy off the bench, Leinster, I think it was Beard, you know, explosive second rower with, you know, great skill set. So their forwards, with the combination of, you know, experienced players and Sexton and Murray in and around that group, whoever starts, and guys like Jammo having a bit of flair and James Lowe and players like that, Bundy Arki, they're in a really good spot. But it's about finding the form they're in now and peaking for the World Cup, because that's what everyone will be judged on. Because at the end of the day, with the All Blacks this year, there's still a lot of trophies in the cabinet. Okay, we're missing two, but outside of that, we haven't missed any others.
If you're going to make your mistakes, you better make them now, I suppose, Brent.
Well, yeah, exactly. You kind of look at, here's another example, I think, you know, that you talk about in Ireland, you know, even though previously, we talked about it last week or when we played them, they felt like they were peaking, you know, 2 years out from a World Cup. So, yes, ideally as an All Black fan and for the All Black country, we we're so used to the excellence of them winning every year. But for me personally, I'd rather take the losses right now and get in a position right now where we can actually have the learnings and be able to adapt our game 2 years out from World Cup, and to have the end result, we come in 2023 and we win a World Cup due to the fact of having the tough India tour that we had this year. So I think it's more so like we've just talked about. It's been able to take the learnings and the things that did work really well. You talk around the pick and go game, Jip, been able to, you know, we scored 19 points against the French on the weekend. And then I think also it's our kicking game. It's been able to use our kicking game to go from defence into attack. And so I guess, you know, is it going to be off 9? Is it going to be more off 10? Is it going to be some contestable, some crossfield kicks like Bowden Barrett or Geordie Barrett have done during the series? And then you talk around dominating the field position. Do you want to kick nice and long through the middle of the field because the two in the pendulum are at the on the sideline? So I think the way that we can try and kick and can try and control position can be one thing that we also need to do as well. And then I think also for us as All Blacks, because we want to attack so much, it's been able to then attack and get a structural set in place to be able to apply pressure on attack from a kick game. So, you know, whether the South Africans or the English or whoever, Ireland, whoever it is, they want to go back to a little bit of more of a contestable format and want to go into a kicking game, territory game, then how can we be able to attack off that and be able to ask questions and be able to try and get through line speed defence, which probably the most teams that have put us under pressure off that line speed due to the fact that they've kicked well and kind of put us in awkward parts of the field.
So, Jibber, I want to go back to your point about the Springboks 2 years out from the World Cup. Obviously, probably the key difference between them and the All Blacks in this particular moment is that they got rid of their previous coach. Admittedly, having been hammered by 50-odd points in Albany, which the All Blacks haven't got to those depths yet, although they did concede their highest ever half-time deficit against France on the weekend. We don't have a new coach coming in. Ian Foster is there for another 2 years. He was given an extra 2 years in his contract before this tour happened. Looking at Ian Foster, 2 years into his deal, do you feel like they made the right choice instead of going with Razor? And on top of that, with 2 years left on his new extension, was that extension given too early?
I think it's a really tough question to answer when you're not in the room of the interviews. Like, Razor's credentials speak for themselves. But as we've seen with players that perform at Super Rugby level, making that next test match level is challenging. And I suppose because Fozzie had been in and around that environment, I suppose it was a natural step for him to go in there. And I don't really want to join the chorus of, you know, is he the right guy? Should, you know, Scott Robinson be in there? I just, the fact of the matter is he is our national coach and his team is there. And they're the ones that have experienced this down. And I think they'll be the ones best placed to take the lessons they've felt and moving us forward to the World Cup is for the reasons I've already explained, really.
Are you on the same page, Bryn?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think it's just for the fact that, you know, Razor's had so much success and you know, his credentials are, you know, we've talked about it and Jip alluded to it around how successful he's been. But again, I think, you know, the fact that Ian Foster's been in that environment with Steve Hansen and has done his time and has a pretty good understanding of what the All Black environment is. And no doubt, you know, in that interview process as well, you would have had players and people that would have supported him and that kind of stuff as well. So I think it's more so we've just got to embrace it. The fact that, you know, there's 2 more years, there's not going to be a change of coach, and it's been able to get behind him and get him the support systems or things in place to be able to succeed. Because look, it's 2023, it's contracted to 2023. So, you know, give him everything that we can to be able to make a successful run and winning a Rugby World Cup. And, you know, that's having Ian Foster and the Brad Moore and the likes of John Plumtree and all those guys in Freak as well, having them there. So, yes, there's going to be decisions and people have their opinions around what's going to happen, but it's set in stone. And, you know, let's give them the opportunity to be able to try and win a World Cup. And like we've talked around, hopefully they can take the learnings and have an opportunity to be able to rectify a few things that they think they need to work on going into the 2022 and 2023 season.
I think also just one point to note is we speak about the players and I suppose the high-pressure situation they've found in the last 2 weeks and the need to show, I suppose, composure when you know, you're right in the thick of it and that pressure's on. It's no different here. Like, I think it's key for us to just be composed and back ourselves. We made that decision and we've got to back that decision and you know, us as, I suppose, administrators and that coaching group, if they show that sort of composure, that can only filter down to the playing group. And it's a great, I suppose, style of teaching leadership under pressure.
And here's another one. Sorry, just before we move on from this, Ross, you look at Sir Graham Henry and Steve Hansen and Wayne Smith back in the day. When they lost their World Cup, we had a great team at that time, and most of the New Zealand public was saying, get rid of them, and New Zealand Rugby Union, they stuck with them, and look, 4 years later, they ended up winning a Rugby World Cup, and it wasn't smooth sailing. You look at that kind of 2009 year, I think, they lost to South Africa three times in that series, and pretty similar questions around happening. Are they the right people for the job? But I think, the fact that they've made that decision, I trust them. I trust them to be able to, they're going to make the learnings and be able to have the opportunities to be able to have that, this end of year tour and make the learnings to come forward to give us an opportunity to go to 2023 and win a World Cup in France.
It's interesting. I had someone text message me the other day and say, hey, who was the last All Blacks coach to feel this much heat? And more than that, feel this much heat the moment they came into the role. And I was trying to go back through the professional era, and really Ian Foster's in a very unique place in comparison to every other All Blacks coach that has come before him, in that he's never been like a head coach at international level, or he hadn't won a championship at a domestic level when he came into the job. So he always was going to have more acid on him. He's currently sitting at about 85% winning record, which, through history is a very good winning record, and pretty much only All Blacks coaches have ever had that kind of winning record. So it's not looking awful, but at the same time, he was always going to cop this. He knows it, he's admitted it. He was always going to be in this position because of the fact that he didn't have what Graham Henry had with the Blues and Wales, or Hansen had with winning a World Cup, and also, doing a pretty good job at Wales. You go back through Laurie Mains, John Hart, these guys are guys who've won championships, big titles. Foster was always going to be in this position. I can't think about how hard it would be for him right now, not that I'm being apologetic for him, because he was put in a position where the New Zealand public had their guy. He wasn't given the job, and he's on a hiding to nothing, basically, unless he wins that World Cup every week until he wins it. Is that a fair summation, do you think, Chipper?
Oh, look, I think any coach that gets the role of All Blacks is going to be judged by the World Cup. That's the nuts and bolts of it. As I mentioned before, he's won a hell of a lot of trophies the last 2 years in trying circumstances. And I suppose that's the difference, is he's come through this COVID era, so there's nothing actually to compare it to understand, it potentially might be, a successful campaign when you look back at it and see what they've gone through. I don't know. But I also would pose the question back, is why don't we back our system to bring our coaches through? Why do they have to go somewhere else to get that experience to then get the All Black job? It's, if he does pull off 2023, I think he's paved the way for coaches to stay here, coach at super level, and be patient enough to wait for that job to become vacant and for them to put their head in the ring.
It's an interesting skill dynamic, I suppose, going from assistant coach to head coach and being head coach at a lower level and going up to a head coach at a higher level. I don't know enough about it, but I can imagine, Bryn, that it's quite a different process and quite a different adjustment.
Oh, it depends, because I think in nowadays, especially, well, only from my experience, I look at Super Rugby, and it's not even obviously to the extent of international level, but the head coach has the assistant coaches do a lot of the coaching, So yes, Fozzie was obviously an assistant coach, and was then being able to go into the head coaching role, and so you more so become a bit of a manager of people, and so that's what the head coach role, kind of even at our level, Super Rugby level, they've got a really good ability to be able, head coaches be able to be connect with people and being able to keep them on task with a big idea and a big goal. And then your assistant coaches, predominantly do a lot of the coaches and have a collaborative idea together with the head coach. But, they run their own system. They run, whether that be attack or defense or whatever it is. So I think the transition going up to a head coach is you've got to have the ability to be able to be a good people person and people manager. And so, Fozzie's had experience with Fozzie. He's a really, really nice guy, and he's got a really good ability to be able to talk to people and have a caring aspect to him. So I don't think the transition would be too much. It does take a little bit of time. Obviously, it is a different role from being an assistant coach, but the difference between an assistant role and a head coach role isn't that much, especially when you get up to kind of, I can only assume, at international level, like it is at Super Rugby.
Well, I reckon we've got pretty deep into the All Blacks there. Maybe it's time to move on to the Blackburns, huh? And to the next one. They probably too will be having a thorough review, especially with the World Cup coming up next year. Another tough loss to France. They've lost their last six test matches in a row now, four on this tour and then two in the previous ones before that. So, where do they sit, Jip, heading into next year? What does their review process has to look like?
Well, can I first off start by saying it was a much better performance? They were right in the hunt, especially at 14-7. The penalty try just before the break hurt. So I suppose there's still the same key areas that we've spoken about that need improving. Obviously, the maul defence and their set piece work, both attack and defence, is probably a key pillar. That they'll be wanting to rectify and focus on. But it certainly has got better. I don't know if you noticed, especially at the back of the lineup, they were doing a couple of quality sacks. The French players adjusted quite well to it, but they did have moments of success of having the ability to stop the mauls, but also the French had the ability to adjust. I suppose the other thing is the kick strategy. I 16 kicks in a game where they had 70% territory in favour of the French, 30% territory in favor of themselves. So if you're only kicking 16 times, you need to really make sure those kicks are accurate and not rushed. So I think a big block for them is to really focus on kicking on their terms and making sure that they're ready, their chase line's ready, their blockers are ready, and it's going to be an effective attacking kick or an effective, territory-based kick. But I think that is because the balance of possession was about 50-50. And I think the French kicked about 27 times to our 16. So it's definitely an area that they can focus on getting better in. And then I suppose, finally, is to acknowledge that, man, when they attack, their attack looks good. Like a couple of times, Portia Woodman did a Jonah Lomu on Mike Catt, like just steamrolling players. And they've got a good physical presence about them. So I don't think, again, I know I might be sounding optimistic all today, but it's not as doom and gloom. Like they're in charge of the changes, similar to what we said about the Wallabies earlier in the year. If they can control what they can control, like 21 turnovers, 18 penalties, being clinical with ball in hand and fix up those areas I spoke about before, I still think they're in a good spot to be competitive. And a year out, yes, it's a bit of work to do, but I think at home, we've seen how big a home crowd plays for these teams. I think that'll be a massive, I suppose, incentive for them to dot their I's and cross their T's for the next, 8 to 9 months to bring the very best out of themselves so that they can have a crack at this World Cup.
It's always sunny on Auckland's North Shore, eh, Jipper? It's
Yeah.
always sunny over there. Bryn's there as well. Bryn, is it sunny where you are as far as they're concerned heading into the next World Cup?
Yeah, I think, well, Jibber's pretty much touched up on all the points that I wanted to bring up as well, just so how astute he is, and I love hearing that. So, no, Jibber brought up all those some really great points, but I do think the ability that they are going to have to when they do play these oppositions, because they're not going to play them again, is that the fact that they might be a little bit tight. And what I mean by that is that, like, they're not going to get many opportunities compared to like what they've probably been accustomed to all over the years. And so because these teams are so clinical and so ruthless, you can't afford to be able to give away penalties, which they've done predominantly a lot on this tour, letting the valve off and being able to give them easy outs. So the penalties, there's 17, I think it was 17 or 18 that Jip said, and then having 24 turnovers conceded, you can't build momentum off that. And so when you're playing against really good teams that are dominating in set piece, which they'll go away with a real emphasis on trying to get their right, especially their line out, both throwing the ball in and being able to stop a line out driving more. But I think it's with our attack. You've got the likes of Portia Woodman, Stacey Flula, we even talked to Aisha as well, those kind of girls, and even Kendra Coxage as well, at a time who's such a great player and can bring so many attributes and so many great things for that team. But just due to the fact that we aren't building enough pressure, even though it was a lot better physicality and it was a lot more competitive on the weekend, if you're going to continue to keep turning over the ball and giving away penalties, especially against these high quality teams, you're just not going to keep yourself in the game. And then the points that Gyps brought up around their set piece, that's going to be a massive, massive 12 to 24 months, sorry, 12, well, you know, 12, 6 to 12 months to get there right. Because if you can't get there right, Gyps has said it all along, If you do not get your set piece right, or you do not do your forward grunt work, you give no opportunities for the likes of Flula, or you know, even the Portia Woodmans and the likes of those players to be able to really imprint them game. And it's just like having one-on-ones, you know, or just the ability to be able to get them in space instead of just running into brick walls and trying to beat them like that.
It's interesting. I know that you mentioned, you know, give credit to the Northern Hemisphere teams in the men's game. We obviously have to give a lot of credit in the women's game as well. When you look at the evolution of professional rugby in the women's game, which is still relatively new, you could probably create an argument that this French and English team are the best prepared teams to ever have played the game in the women's game. And you could probably make a very strong argument they're the best ever teams to have played the game in the women's game. And that's what the Black Ferns are having to get used to. And that's the level, Jipper, they have to step up to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose need to be given the opportunity to be, you know, fully professional as well. You know, it's a I suppose, a blueprint or a pathway these teams show how much they can improve as individual athletes as well as a collective approach as teams. And I suppose understanding the game more and you know, changing their tactics up and seeing what works for them. And that's all time together, isn't it? It's all relationships and building those combinations. We all love the Ben Darwin theory, but it's not wrong. You know, you need time to build those combinations. The more time you can have on the grass with each other, off the grass, and having those strong connections and bonds brings you together as a team. And then I suppose that dedication to the S&C side, it gives you the ability to do that 24/7 to make yourself the very best version of yourself.
Well, we wish them all the best in that prep for the next step in their World Cup defence. Hopefully it all goes well for the Black Ferns when they step up next year. Let's take a look back at the test matches on the weekend now that we've gone through the New Zealand teams. England, South Africa. Hell of a test match in the end, a hell of a result. Jipper, what did you take out of that game as far as where England and South Africa sit right now?
Oh, I took out of it... you know, the English attack, especially in that first 20 minutes, was pretty strong. You know, like they were really physical, recycled that ball really quick. And I suppose the ability to execute under pressure, like I don't know if you saw it, but Slade's pass to Tuolangi for that first try, man, he was under rush D pressure and he just got rid of it. And it was a good 15, 20 meter pass. So their skill set under pressure, their physical carries, getting across that gain line, allowing Youngs to get in there and get the ball out. And I suppose their attitude to play early, again, I sort of alluded to it early, but they really wanted to score tries and then chip away at the threes after that, which, you know, they did. And they also scored a great try in the second half through Joe Marchand, who had to move from the wing into the centre, which is probably his preferred position, to be honest. And man, he looked good. You know, he sort of came from outside of the squad onto the edge, and then, you know, Tuolangi's injury brought him in, and you know, he made every post a winner to you know, stake his claim for more game time. And then the Springboks, you know, it was a high penalty count for England. You know, I think it was 18-8 in the end. And I think, you know, they obviously wanted to chip away at three, but you know, Pollard missed a couple, and they were from tough distance and angle. And I just think the one time they actually kicked to the corner, they sucked in some defence, and Mpimpi scored in the left-hand corner after starting the right-hand corner. And I just think maybe a couple of those penalties earlier in the game where they, you know, I know it's hindsight, and Pollard, if he'd got them, you know, they'd probably run away with the game anyway. But their maul is so destructive. Utilising that to suck defenders in to then give their backs, like Delendi's on fire at the moment, and Mpimpi's scoring tries at will. I just think they might regret those sorts of decisions, or not regret, but maybe look back at them and say, hey, we can actually, because when they play rugby, as we've spoken about, they score points and they score them convincingly. And then while they were still up, I'd say that last minute would frustrate them looking back at it, just how reckless they were in terms of, I think it was Reinhardt went for the turnover, and he was never ever, you know, that was on the edge. He was never ever going to be holding his own body weight. As elbows were on the grass, and then when it moved in, Francois Stein, just flew in with his knees. You know, like his intent was there, but if they just remained composed in that, you know, and not given away a penalty, and they'd been so disciplined the whole game, it doesn't give England that opportunity. So there's just a couple of things that maybe they'll consider, but I do think they're worthy number ones. I know they didn't win this, but they are at times a complete package.
England's pretty much right up there with them as almost first equal right now, are they, Brenner?
Yeah, absolutely. Whenever you beat a side like the South Africans, and you obviously have success against the Australians as well. And it would have been great to see an English and All Black game, because that's always a storied rivalry. But now they've got the ability. They scored 3 tries to 1, and obviously South Africans play a little bit different around accumulating points with Pollard and in the boot, and then being able to build pressure through that way. But yeah, look, I think England, it's even England, Ireland, and France. Those three teams, I'm just so impressed with how they played against the Northern Hemisphere teams, and it's the different styles that they can play. Their attacking ability and their efficiency at the breakdown is probably something that's one thing that the All Blacks probably want moving forward going into next year. Whether that's the ability to be able to get off that collision and that footwork, or get over that advantage line, and the efficiency of the clean out, to be able to then give the likes of, you talk about Merchant or Arthur was outstanding on the weekend, and giving those guys opportunities to be able to play on the front foot ball. But then again, we're accustomed to seeing them being able, they can switch it straight back into that kicking game, whether it be off Kerr, Murray, Jamo, or DuPont, who can kick off both feet, or off their 10. So they're in a really good place of being able to go through both styles at the moment, those three teams. And England again, anytime they can get a win against a South African team who, you're probably looking at it, probably should have won that test match, if Kelisi doesn't get that sin bin, which I thought that was tough, but we've talked around the law, and it's probably warranted of a yellow card in this day and age. And then a couple of brain explosions from, I think it was Jantjies, and then even Steyn as well. At the back end of a test series where, you're going to win the test match, you've done so hard to be able to grind your way back into the game and have two penalties like that. It's probably a sour note for the South Africans, thinking that we probably should have won that test match if they didn't do that in the back end of the game.
Let's go there with some of the refereeing decisions from the weekend. Jipper, there's a wee message from you into the WhatsApp group about that Tompkins try for Wales versus the Wallabies with the slapdown. You were fired up.
Oh, mate, it just was confusing because Beale had obviously been yellow carded earlier in the game, and his eye line or whatever. But my understanding of the law is you've got to make a genuine attempt, and one of the things that was always explained to us is that, you got your hands got to be going up to make it look like you're tapping the ball up to regather it. And I just didn't see that. And look, I'm not convinced it was smacked backwards. And then to award the 7 points, such a crucial 7 points. I mean, the Wallabies fight and guts on this tour. It certainly hasn't gone their way, but those are the uncoachables, and Dave Rennie will be absolutely frothing with that. Like, he'll be loving that because he knows he can sort the other stuff out with him and his coaching staff. But it was just confusing at times, some of the refs' decisions. And I'm always an advocate on here for supporting the refs and making sure that they don't get too many, I suppose, sticks thrown at them. And the one thing I always say is you have to be consistent on the night. If you're consistent within that 80 minutes, it will not create frustration. It wasn't consistent. It was very inconsistent. I think that's why I was getting frustrated. And I'm obviously still looking for that job with the Wallabies too.
Well, it's even like
Don't bring me
it's
on that.
even
He agrees.
it's even Valentini's red card, the
Oh,
idea
no,
of that,
that's
of that.
red. I reckon that's red. Like, you've got to drop your height now, and I know it's face on face, but that's a clear law. You have to show a dip. You can't just keep running upright. It's similar to the one in the air. It's your responsibility to do so. Because we've got to make some changes. We can't have a crack at the unions, around the head collisions, and then have a crack at them around the red card. So I've got no problem with that. It's just the inconsistency between one gets awarded a try and the other one gets yellow carded. It was frustrating to watch. It was a great test to watch, though, I might say as well. And the Welsh deserve credit because obviously Beale kicks late to put the Wallabies up, and it was just set up, wasn't it, for like the redemption of Quade Cooper and Kirtley Beale for the Wallabies, kicking late goals to get them wins. But it wasn't to be. But you've got to credit the Welsh to they came from deep to get themselves in the position to nearly score a try to win that game. So, and they're under, like we spoke about before, England, Ireland, I think you said the French as well, Brenner, and we've got Springboks right up there, and I still believe the All Blacks are up there. The Welsh won the Six Nations. That they're going through a tough time in terms of injuries and Getting their full squad back out there. So they are a threat as well. And as I mentioned with the Wallabies, their guts and their fight, I just feel they're creating something special in that environment. And I think if they can control the controllables, as we always say, they put themselves within winning most test matches.
Sorry, Wada has done this autumn or this India tour. It's just opened up the planet. If you think around like the world rugby, and you predominantly always see the All Blacks in and around there, they're the standard. That's where you want to get to as a nation. But you look at all these other teams now. I think going into 2022, I can't wait to see the Six Nations power that plays out next year, and even the likes of when the June series when the All Blacks get to play. But I'm looking forward really now. If you were to do the competition or the World Cup right now, I know we're not going to, but you could seriously, genuinely say six, seven teams would be in a position to win in their World Cup, and for a really good chance to do that. We probably haven't had this. I can't remember in my time that I've been alive, that there's so many teams that are so competitive that could possibly win a World Cup, and how close it is between those five or six nations.
Yeah, it's definitely exciting. And it's good that the expectations heading into the next World Cup from a New Zealand point of view will lie on every single game along the way. You can no longer be like, okay, if we don't make the semi-finals, we're an absolute failure. I mean, it'll be treated that way, no doubt. But, there is a very good chance that quarterfinal opponent could be the opponent that can absolutely trip you up, and
Well,
maybe in the last World Cup, Ireland should have been that, but they weren't, were they?
no, but even look at the Scottish team, like the growth they'll have in another year's time. I mean, their forwards are laying such a great platform, but their backs are electric, man. Like Stuart Hogg leading the way, but all of them, Finn Russell, it's just exciting to watch them when they come from deep in their counter-attack or when they attack off a maul. They're innovative. They're another threat as well, because on their day they can beat anyone. That's the beautiful thing. But and don't we, I suppose, love it, because this just adds excitement to every test match that's played, and it brings people that probably aren't big fans of our game to watching our game because it's entertaining.
Yeah, what about Japan? Where are they at? They had a better game on the weekend, sure, but where are they at? Are they getting close to those top six or seven teams that we're talking about, Bryn?
Oh, I think they'll be probably disappointed around that series, especially. I mean, they probably would have had high hopes going to the Northern Tour, and probably having aspirations of trying to simulate that. This is a World Cup, and having those kind of things around, like how the All Blacks were probably testing, the fact that they're playing France round one in the Rugby World Cup, and trying to maybe simulate a prep week or what it's going to be like in Europe. So, no, look, I think they will be disappointed, and I think we probably expect a little bit more from them now, knowing that the success that they had in the last World Cup, but. I think the biggest thing for them moving forward is just being able to, we know that they play a high tempo game, and they continue to keep doing that. But it's always going to be the physicality and that set piece of being able to win those moments in big test matches and being able to do that time and time again. So, and then the ability as well to be able to kick the ball and being able to then defend for long periods of time against the physical likes, you look at South Africa or the English, and being able to do that for long periods of time. So, look, I don't think they're in that kind of realm around the six or seven, the teams that we have talked about. They do have a little bit more work to go to do, but I think in the same vein as the Black Ferns, the fact that they went overseas and they went on tour. It's no different for Japan. They went over there and played some high quality games against teams in their home stadiums overseas. And they'll be able to, hopefully take away the learnings, and Jamie Joseph and Scott Hansen and Tony Brown and that group can make the adjusted learnings that we've talked about with the All Black Ferns and probably the Southern Hemisphere teams as well.
Let's move on to domestic rugby. Today, the Super Rugby Pacific squads for the New Zealand teams and Moana Pacifica came out. We've obviously had players released over a period of time, so we knew most of the people in these squads already. But when you see it on paper and you put it next to the other teams, it does tell a story. Bryn, who do you see as the strongest squad? Obviously, you've got to be a little biased when you look on paper. Where do you see the teams who are the real threats to you guys?
Oh, look, I think there are all the teams are always competitive in New Zealand, Super Rugby, Aotearoa, Pacific next year. But I do like a couple of signings that the Blues have had. We're going to see Roger Tuivasa-Sheck coming into next year, who was a great coup for the Blues, and was unfortunate that he didn't get play for the Auckland team and Bunnings NPC to be able to see him and, you know, I guess, you know, iron out a few things and get back to playing rugby for when he was younger. And I think the signing of Luke Romano is a great signing by Leo McDonald. The amount of knowledge that he brings on the field, but also probably more so off the field, and what he can bring for that locking companions at the Blues is going to be massive for them. You know, the facts that they lost, you know, the likes of Epa, who was massive for them last year, who we thought possibly could be in their All Black frame, and Paddy Tupilotu won't be playing as well. So anytime you can add experience of a guy like Luke Romano into that environment to be playing or to be able to be coaching or mentoring those young guys coming through, it's going to be really good. And they've got Anton Segner, again, who I think is a really young, talented kid coming through the system who has gotten away from us and has seen the light at the Blues. But he's a young guy that's coming through, and I know there's a lot of flankers or loose forwards in that kind of setup, but a guy that for the future is definitely one to look out for. So, look, I'd say the Blues are probably sitting real pretty. And for me, you know, they'd probably be one team that I'd see thinking that they'd go pretty close to winning the championship next year with their recruitment and the fact that they won Super Rugby AU last year.
Handing on favouritism already, Bryn.
Well, you got to give credit to them. You've got to give credit to them. They've got a great group, and it hasn't just been from last year. It's been building. So they've got a really good squad, and they're getting guys like the likes of Luke Romano, you know, even you know, Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, who's obviously come from league, but and they have Bowden Barrett as well, who's back as well, who's, you know, playing pretty good footy as well. So all sitting pretty for the Blues coming 2022, Chipper.
Beauty, mate. Sounds good. We can wrap the competition up, can we? Well, for me, look, I agree with Bryn. I think there's been some great signings by the Blues. I think another one is Ricky Riccatelli. We know how, you know, awesome he's been for the Hurricanes when he stepped into that role. And I think the competition between himself, Kurt Eklund, and Suani Vakena will be awesome for their individual growth, but also for the Blues with everyone vying for minutes, which is great. I think if you look at the Chiefs' first five, depth is pretty exciting, and you know that competitive environment is a big thing. You know, I just mentioned it with the hookers there, but I think Josh Ioane played some fantastic footy towards the back end of this NPC. You've got Caleb Trask there, who we know, you know, he's proven to perform really well at super level. And Bryn Gatlin, I don't need to wax lyrical about him because I've pretty much done that for the last 2 years. But I think that's exciting for them. And you know, with Damien heading off and bringing a guy like Brody Retallick back into the mix is special as well. I think the Canes have done really well recruiting-wise. You know, Tay Walden, Blake Gibson. Some, you know, really solid, experienced guys to bring into that group to, I suppose, set, you know, the back three alight that we know there, and maybe, you know, challenge, I suppose, a couple of players in there for spots. You know, Duplessis, Karif is there, Blake. You know, that competition's key. So I think most sides are recruited well. Know about Pablo Matera down in the Crusaders, and I think also Triple T is a big one. You know, we've spoken about on here, but that depth at half is key, because we know, like, that, and I don't want to, I'll touch wood as I say this, but you know, they've been very fortunate that Bryn and Drummy have stayed fit for, you know, 3 or 4 years, but having that security of someone that's representing the All Blacks in that third spot is massive. And I suppose it's not really fair for me to say the third spot, is it, Bryn? I suppose it's straight away a blank canvas. You boys will be competing for that 9 jersey from the get-go, and the Highlanders bringing back Gareth Evans, you know, sort of replacing Liam Squire in there. I think players like that have been awesome. And Marty Banks as well, I think, is key for them.
There were two guys, sorry, Ross, there were two other guys that I thought was a great signing as well. I think, you know, Dominic Bird as well, going back to the Hurricanes, is going to be great for that team. And, you know, obviously you have Scott Scraft in there, and, you know, they've obviously had some James Blackwell, who's been great, a great season performer. But anytime you can create a guy like that with Dominic Bird, especially with this height and coming into the line-out, it's a real asset for them. And I think it's going to be a great signing for them moving forward. And I think also Simon Hickey coming down south is going to be a massive one for us. You know, not too sure what's happening with Richie, and he might be out for, you know, 4 to 6 weeks in that first comp. And, you know, Fergus Burke has been, you know, coming through the ranks and, you know, got some good valuable minutes with us last year. And then, you know, got a full season with Canterbury, with Brett Cameron going to Manawatu. I think, you know, having a guy like Simon Hickey who, you know, like you said, Jip, if there are any injuries and, you know, Fergus Burke or whoever goes down or Richie does go down, you've got a guy that's plied his trade not only with the Blues and at the Hurricanes, but he's been overseas and, you know, that kind of season campaigner. And look, he's not the age of like a Mike Delaney. You know, very similarly, we brought Mike Delaney into the environment for that kind of third role and that older guy. Simon's not that old to old Mullies, but anytime you can add experience in that, especially at 9 or 10, I think the Crusaders, yeah, look, they've done that really well with Triple T, and you know they're bringing the likes of with the likes of bringing Simon Hickey and also Big Pablo Martín. I'm looking forward to seeing how he goes. So look forward to seeing him with his shoot.
I can't wait till he smashes you at training.
Mate, I'll be wearing the yellow boot, brother. Don't you worry about that.
What does that mean? What does the yellow boot mean, mate?
No contact. Quarterback. No go zone.
Just a protected veteran, eh?
The Tom Brady of the team.
Anytime
a few less grey hairs than Mike Delaney, though.
What's that?
A few less grey hairs than Mike Delaney.
Oh, sorry. Let me just make this very, very clear. Simon Hickey, obviously, is not as old as Mike Delaney when he came down here. So, but an experienced guy who knows. He's played a lot of rugby, and not only New Zealand, but other parts of the world.
I think the other key with Sickle is he's hungry to play because he's had a couple of seasons of injuries. And I think that's massive what he can bring to that environment as well. Like, he'll want to play minutes. He won't be there to make up the numbers. And I think that's, you know, it is a great signing on that sense of what he wants to still achieve in his rugby and potentially, you know, reform his career here in NZ, but then also create opportunities for him later on overseas.
I remember from talking with Jason Holland from the Hurricanes when Hickey was there, he talked about how integral he was to their attack setup. Having that kind of brain, whether he's on or off the field, is really big, just like you mentioned with Mike Delaney coming through. What about Moana Pacifica? Now, do they have the depth? Because they've obviously got a good probably starting 15, but do they have the depth in what could turn out to be a long season for an expansion franchise to really push towards playoffs in their first year, Jipper?
Well, the thing you have to look at the players they've recruited, and a lot of them are from, I suppose, the New Zealand environment at the NPC, and a lot of them coming out of Hawke's Bay, to be honest, and we know how successful they've been. But it will be a challenge because, you know, you're starting a new club. It's, I suppose, a new group. Like, yeah, they're all great as individuals within the systems they're coming from. But getting together and getting a bond and, I suppose, a greater purpose as that unit will take time. So I don't think there's any need to put pressure on them. But when I read through their squad, pretty impressive. You know, like, I've been talking up for my... In the Magpies, Lalangi Visenia, a number of those Magpies players are massive. But I think, you know, if depth is tested, it's probably who are the replacement players. So that squad to me looks good. It's not just the 15. I think that looks like a really competitive squad and a team that could do the damage. But I suppose where are the replacement players coming from and what experience, and can they fill those gaps as we're talking about with some of the New Zealand sides?
I think it's going to be really important for that group, I think, moving forward. You know, I think, you know, it's going to be an exciting time for them. And you think, you probably look at the first, probably, you know, probably first month of competitions, they're going to be upbeat. And, you know, they've got a pretty good draw in the fact, you know, they get to be at home for the first one, their first couple. And so, you know, that kind of excitement and that kind of stuff and playing a new competition, you know, an inaugural first team that you're going to play for is really going to be really exciting. And I think depth is something that we've talked about, which is going to be a mess to them. But I think it's going to be the grind. It's the grind of having the long season, and, you know, you get to that week 8, week 9 and being able to train at a high intensity, playing at high intensity and playing really good teams consistently in and out every single week. I think that's going to be a real test for them, seeing how they are able to do that. And so the likes of Christian Lilafano, even, you know, Kepu as well, those boys, and given those young fellas coming through, a lot of them have played in the Bunnings NPC. And so their ability to, you know, you play one, you know, that campaign's 10 weeks compared to, you know, putting another 6 or 7 games and a much more of a high intensity, you can't afford to slack off, especially if you have aspirations to make the playoffs. And so the experienced guys who have been in those environments and know what that looks like, I think, is going to be really important. And Aaron Major understanding of it as well. And so I think for the fact, you know, the contracting system probably had to happen really, really quickly. And fortunately enough, the NPC, a lot of those guys were able to play really well. I look at, you know, the Anisi brothers, you know, Lotsu Anisi, who I think is one guy that you probably want to look out for. He was making massive gains for us at Harbour. He's an explosive number eight at the back. So, you know, given an opportunity at this level, it would be great to see how his development goes. And I've talked around Eddie Anari as well. You know, you look at how his form, you know, you've watched a lot of Bunnings NPC, and, you know, he's probably one of the form halfbacks and couldn't make contract for another New Zealand Super Rugby franchise. And so, fortunate enough, the Mono Pacifica was there, and through his heritage and an opportunity in that club, he's going to be able to play meaningful minutes. And, you know, even like the likes of Tamatini are there as well. And so, I think it's a really exciting time for them, and I'm really stoked that it's in Auckland. You know, the ability to be able to have that community as well, which a lot of Pacifica Islander people are in Auckland. And so, they're going to have that really home-based feel, and really looking forward to seeing how they go in this competition, and hopefully there isn't too many injuries and they can really put their best foot forward moving forward in this competition.
Yeah, it's going to be a good year next year. That is our review show for this year's competition. Still one more show to go this year. That is the second annual Aotearoa Rugby Pod Awards Night. Now, I don't think we gave away any trophies last year, and it just came to me that maybe the perfect trophy, you know, you've got the green jacket, you've got all those kind of things. Maybe Bryn's yellow bib is the player of the year trophy.
I reckon it should be a manscaper.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we'll get some sponsors on board. We'll see how we go. But yeah, tune in for us next week. We will go through our players of the year domestically, internationally, maybe some of our plays of the year too, teams of the year, all of those wonderful things, all competing for the Bryn Hall yellow bib, where you don't get any contact training that next week. I'm not sure we could get all of the super coaches on site to follow through on that for 1 week as part of the podcast. Surely they'd be in. Surely.
It's a huge play if you can get the bib, man. It's a huge play as a player. We're loving it.
Well, we'll wrench it out of your hands and give it to somebody. So thank you very much, James Parsons, Bryn Hall. I'm Ross Carl. That was another Aotearoa Rugby Pod. Catch you next week. Mā te wā.